Injured in a car accident? We cap attorney's fees at 30% of the first million. Any recovery above that is all yours. No recovery, no fees or costs. If another lawyer wants more, Lawyer Up 904. For accidents, injuries, and more, Lawyer Up 904. Jacksonville.
The sports world keeps spinning, and the local conversation continues. Now, Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
And a very good Wednesday evening to you, Jacksonville. A Thanksgiving Eve edition of Hacker After Dark here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM with Dylan Denmark. The Hacker, Ryan Green, with you. Glad you are with us. I know what you're thinking. 8 o'clock show to 10 o'clock show on Wednesday night. Hacker's going to mail it in, right? It's the last show of the week, or last show at least before Thanksgiving, here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. It's time to get in the victory formation, rest on our laurels, and take a knee. No, sir. Not on this program. Are you kidding me? That's right. We are bringing it on Thanksgiving Eve, and we are glad you are with us here on Hacker After Dark. We have a ton, an absolute ton to get into. Let me set the guest lineup for you. It looks like this. Coming up in the next 20 minutes, Bryant McFadden, former Florida State Seminole, a Super Bowl winner with the Pittsburgh Steelers. You see him now on CBS Sports HQ. You also see him and hear him on the All Things Covered podcast alongside Pro Bowl defensive back Patrick Peterson. We'll have Bryant McFadden on to talk about a bunch of things, including his alma mater, Florida State, getting ready for the Florida Gators about 48 hours from now on Black Friday. We'll also talk a little Trevor Lawrence and a little Jaguars with Bryant McFadden coming up in less than 20 minutes. Later on in the 8 o'clock hour, my man Mike Huguenin. He has covered college football for many, many years. He's now with On3.com. There's not a lot of human beings on planet Earth that I enjoy talking college football with more than my man Mike Huguenin. We will talk Florida, Florida State. We will talk rivalry week as well, coming up with Mike Huguenin later on in the 8 o'clock hour. In the 9 o'clock hour, former Jaguar, Pro Bowl, offensive tackle, and my buddy Leon Searcy will join me at about 9:15 to preview the Jaguars and the Ravens. Of course, that's a Sunday 1 o'clock kick right here on 1010XL. And then finally, at the bottom of the 9 o'clock hour, Ira Schoffel, warchant.com, to give us the Florida State side of the Gators and the Noles this Friday night. So obviously we got a lot to do. We are glad you are with us. As always, here on Hacker After Dark, we kick it off with a big deal of the night and Dylan Denmark. Let's do that right now.
Time now for the big deal of the night.
What's the big deal?
What is the big deal?
No big deal.
It is a big deal.
On Hacker After Dark.
It's really a two-parter, the big deal of the night. Majority of it is about the Florida State game. I did want to mention this for Gator fans, college football fans, heck, high school football fans in our area. Earlier today, Denny Thompson and I did our Gator Bites podcast that we do weekly. You can check it out on 1010XL.com. You can find it on the 1010XL Facebook page. You can find it on the 1010XL YouTube channel. It's all over the place. About a 30, 35-minute podcast. Probably the first 10 to 15 minutes of that podcast today was about the Marcus Stokes situation. For people that don't know, Denny, who is the owner of Six Points, a quarterback training facility here in town, of course you hear him all over the 1010XL radio dial. He is the quarterback coach, basically, the quarterback trainer of Marcus Stokes. Marcus Stokes, for those of you that don't know, the quarterback at Nice, was committed to the University of Florida. A video came out last weekend showing him singing song lyrics, rapping to a song that included a racial slur. The video went viral to the point of TMZ, Fox News, was it Denmark, Jason Whitlock was doing something on it. I mean, it is completely blown up. And the bottom line is that Florida is no longer recruiting Marcus Stokes. They've pulled his scholarship. And I think if you are a Gator fan or a college football fan or, heck, just a sports fan here in Jacksonville, You'll find that conversation very interesting that Denny and I had. Again, Denny knows Marcus almost better than anybody. He's been training him for years, and certainly Denny has an interesting perspective. And I'll give Denny Thompson credit. He was pretty open about things that Florida has told him during this process, how Marcus is dealing with this situation, kind of what's next for Marcus Stokes. So if you missed that, the Gator Bites podcast, the first 15 minutes or so, you can find it on 1010XL.com, on the 1010XL Facebook page, on the 1010XL YouTube page. All right. Speaking of Florida football, 48 hours from now, less than 48 hours from now, Chief Osceola is going to make that ride to the 50-yard line with Renegade. They're going to throw that spear down at the 50-yard line. I don't know if you know this, Denmark, but there was a time where I wasn't exactly an objective broadcast journalist. I was more a guy that, I don't know, maybe bled orange and blue from pretty much my birth up until, I'd say, the age of 25, 26.
Screamed at other fans.
Screamed at other fans, wanted to mix it up with other fans, get in there a little bit, make it happen. And I always thought it would be absolutely hilarious if Renegade, again, this was a more childish time that I was at, but I always thought it'd be hilarious if, you know, Renegade, when he was riding out to the 50-yard line with Chief Osceola, had some bad Chinese food or something and dropped one right before they dropped the spear. Unfortunately, that never happened. And
they're
now I hope
dirty to me, and I kind of like it.
Exactly. I don't want that to happen now, right? Now I'm an objective broadcast journalist, so I would hate for Renegade to have any stomach issues leading Osceola out there. It is one of the great traditions in college football. I kid because I care, and I've said all week here on this program, I don't like Florida's chances. I'm not breaking any news there, I don't think. Florida State is, what, a 9.5, 10?
Now 10.5.
10.5, it's going up. They're a 10.5-point favorite on Friday night. It's clear the Gators are coming in wounded, and that might be an understatement. Whatever that was in Nashville, it was one of the worst regular season losses that Florida has had in quite some time. You combine that with the fact that you're going into a place that smells blood in the water. Florida has given Florida State 4 beatings in a row. Florida State has not won a game in this series since, I believe, 2017. So those Seminole fans are going to want revenge on Friday night. And look, give Florida State credit. Give Mike Norvell credit. They are the better football team. Clearly, they are the better football team. They have the better talent. They are playing the better football. Having said that, there is probably a little bit of expectation on Florida State to win the game. It's a bad Florida team. If the plan goes according to how it's supposed to go, this will be Billy Napier's worst team in Gainesville. You would hope. You would expect this to be Billy Napier's worst team. So Florida State should win the game. I expect Florida State to win the game. But more importantly, Florida State needs to win this game. And if they do, and if they win it going away by 14, 17, 20 points plus, well, then they run the state of Florida right now. I mean, you beat Miami by 42. If you turn around a couple of weeks later and give the Gators the beating on national television on Black Friday night, good heavens. I mean, this is their state for the time being. And you have got to tip your cap to Mike Norvell and to Jordan Travis and to Florida State, because they were awful 2 years ago. And in fact, Florida State was very bad last year. And in 1 year's time, they've gone from very bad and not qualifying for a bowl game to maybe finding themselves with 10 wins. They beat Florida and they win their bowl game. It's a 10-win Florida State team. Who on earth, other than just people that bleed garnet and gold, I suppose, but who on earth would have predicted 10 wins for Florida State coming into the year? And their 3 losses? Could have very easily won all 3 of those games. I mean, Wake Forest, they were right there. NC State, they should have won. They blew that. And Clemson, they came storming back, and Clemson had to survive. a majority of Florida State's wins were blowouts. Now, I will admit that Florida State, and look, the ACC's terrible. The ACC is awful. So they took care of what they needed to take care of. You beat the crap out of Georgia Tech and Syracuse and Boston College. Well, you're supposed to do that. Those teams are awful. And to Florida State's credit, they did that. What I find interesting about Friday night, and again, I think Florida State's going to win the game. But there is no doubt who's played the tougher competition. Florida's lost to a lot of the tougher competition. But you take Florida's schedule and you take Florida State's schedule and you mold them together, it's not even close. Florida has seen the better athletes. They've played the better lines of scrimmage, if you will. I don't know if that'll matter on Friday night because I think Florida State's better all the way around. But if it's a close game in the fourth quarter, does Florida's experience in games like that, games like Tennessee, games like LSU, games like Kentucky, will that benefit them in the fourth quarter in Tallahassee? The only common thing here about Florida and Florida State schedule-wise, they both played LSU. Again, I don't think you have to be the biggest college football fan to realize this. That LSU team that Florida State played on Labor Day weekend is not the LSU team right now. Not even close. It's a great win for Florida State. Don't get me wrong. A terrific win. But if LSU and Florida State were playing tomorrow in New Orleans, who are you picking to win that game? Yeah, I would too. Because LSU is clearly different. Florida played LSU when they were a better football team. And looking ahead, you know, Florida State fans are saying, oh, yeah, right. Well, keep in mind, in September of 2023, guess who you open up with again? LSU. This time in Orlando. So we'll be able to see Brian Kelly's second year opening night compared to Brian Kelly's first year on opening night. But back to the point at hand, the game will be heard right here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM, the Gators and the Noles. What does a loss mean for Florida? Well, a loss means that you lost to every rival you got. You lost to Tennessee. You lost to LSU. You lost to Georgia. And you would have then lost to Florida State. You throw in the Vandy loss and the Kentucky loss. Yikes. It's not good. That means your only wins this year came against Eastern Washington, South Florida, South Carolina, Missouri. I mean, you're talking about a Utah was the best win, clearly. And again, that Utah team probably a lot different now than they were opening night, very similar with LSU. So not the year that Billy Napier and the Gators wanted. I still think Billy Napier is in very good standing with Gator fans. I know a lot of people that are still very excited about the direction of the program. But that Vanderbilt game was bad. I think Napier called it a reality check in the postgame press conference. Well, it wasn't just a reality check for the players. It was a reality check for the fan base. How far this team has to go. And I think they're willing to travel with Napier as long as there is significant progress shown next year. If you go 6-6 this year, boy, you better go 8-4, 9-3 at a minimum next year, or people will start talking. And that's what happens in the Southeastern Conference. There's no shame in that. You know about it when you take the job. 6-6 year one, all right. You go 6-6, 7-5 year two, people are going to have a problem with that. So it'll be a big year. Now, on the flip side, if Florida wins the game, well, at that point, the Vanderbilt game is completely gone. Nobody even cares about that outside of the people in Nashville, Tennessee. If Florida goes into Tallahassee on Saturday night and upsets Florida State in front of a national TV audience, well, then that's the best win of the year. That gives Billy Napier and that staff unbelievable momentum heading into the transfer portal. So it's a big game for Florida. For Florida State, again, I think it's simple. If you win, you control the state. If you lose, I think the narrative drastically changes for the Noles. Great year, terrific year, go into a bowl game, everything's awesome. But if you lose to a Florida team that just lost to Vanderbilt, it won't be catastrophic. I don't want to say that, but it will be a shot to the solar plexus, as Gordon Solie used to say on Saturday morning wrestling. it will definitely be a shot to the solar plexus if Florida goes in there as a 10.5-point dog and knocks off the Florida State Seminoles. So we got a ton to do tonight here on Hacker After Dark. Again, we'll talk Jaguars and Ravens, a lot more on Florida and Florida State as well. Let's kick it off with Bryant McFadden, a former Florida State Seminole defensive back. He went on to win a Super Bowl in the National Football League with the Pittsburgh Steelers. You see him now on CBS Sports HQ. You can hear him on the All Things Covered podcast alongside perennial All-Pro Patrick Peterson. It is Thanksgiving Eve, a Wednesday night in Jacksonville, Florida, with Dylan Denmark, the Hacker Ryan Green with you. Jacksonville, we're glad you're with us here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Hacker After Dark on 1010XL. Now, another interview on the Farrah and Farrah phone line, brought to you by the accident attorneys at Farrah and Farrah.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. Thanksgiving on the horizon, Black Friday, Florida and Florida State at Doak Campbell Stadium. And then, of course, on Sunday, Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens come in to play the Jacksonville Jaguars. There's a lot going on. Let's talk about all of it with former Florida State Super Bowl, or former Florida State Seminole and a Super Bowl winner in the National Football League. His name is Bryant McFadden. He's always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL. Bryant, how we doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Thank you for having me.
Hey, buddy. Always appreciate the time. You can check him out on Twitter at BMAC underscore Sports Talk. You can also see him on CBS Sports HQ. And Bryant, congratulations on the success. You and Patrick Peterson, the podcast you guys have put together, really a good one, man. Congrats.
Oh, thank you kindly. Yeah, it's just another way for, you know, fans and audience to kind of get to know who Pat is, and along with myself as well. You know, of course, we always, you know, highlighting Minnesota Vikings activity. Unfortunately, it wasn't a lot to highlight this past Sunday, recapping the Cowboys game. But in all, it's been a very, very entertaining and exciting year for the Vikings, and along with what Pat has been doing as individuals.
No question about it. Vikings, one of the surprise teams this year. All right, Bryant, let's talk about a game you're very familiar with. It's Florida and Florida State on Friday night in Tallahassee. Boy, what about your Seminoles, man? What a job by Mike Norvell this year. Maybe a 10-win team when all is said and done. What are your thoughts on the Noles to this point?
And I've been really pleased with what I've seen. You know, we've dealt with some adversity throughout the year because we missed a lot of key contributors missed some time. And I think if we were fully healthy for the majority of the year, we would be in a better place record-wise. But in all, just being able to fight through the adversity, and you talk about potentially having an opportunity to win 10 ball games, a drastic improvement from what we saw last year, only winning 5 games, not even getting close to a bowl berth. So you look at the development, you look at the growth, you look at how organized things are looking on both sides of the football. I mean, you have to feel excited about where we are currently and where we're going under Mike Norvell. So hats off to his entire staff along with him, and also to the players buying into the system, being able to execute everything the coaches want them to do.
Bryant, as a guy that played for the great Bobby Bowden in Tallahassee, you know this, man. Mike Norvell wasn't on the best footing coming into the year. You could argue that he should be on the ballot, at least, for National Coach of the Year. What a resurgence for Norvell there in Tallahassee.
No question. I think it was just about, you know, being a little patient and allowing him to get the players that fits what he does. You know, understanding his coaching method, schematically speaking, being able to fit the scheme, and then just executing. I think one of the best telling signs about Mike Norvell is just seeing the growth from Jordan Travis. I mean, Jordan Travis, especially over the last 6-7 ball games, he's probably playing some of the best football in his collegiate career. And I think the best is yet to come. And we know Norvell is kind of hands-on when it comes to, you know, the quarterbacks and play calling and things like that. So that has really been a highlight for our success, because you're only as good as your quarterback. You know, the quarterback is a very, very important position. It's the most important position on the football field because they determine what happens when it comes to scoring points. If you don't have a quarterback, the field feels like 150 yards. I don't care what level of football you're playing on. If you don't have a quarterback, the field is no longer 100 yards. It feels like 150. And because of the growth that we're seeing from Jordan Travis, our offense has taken flight. Also, let me give some tribute to the offensive line group. I mean, the big hogs in the trenches, they have really balled. And for such a long time, Ryan, you know, it felt like the offensive line-wise, it has always been the Achilles heel for our offense. But now they're one of the strong suits on our entire team. So there are a lot of bright spots we can highlight. I know we don't have enough time. But in all, man, great job by the staff, great job by the players. And the job is not done. It's not done. Friday night, as you mentioned, let's make it a Black Friday for Florida, and not in a good way.
Former Seminole defensive back Bryant McFadden here with us on 1010XL in Jacksonville. The one thing that Mike Norvell has done, Bryant, is he has just revolutionized the transfer portal. I mean, I think you look at Florida State, maybe Southern Cal, teams that, I mean, the portal has changed the trajectory of their program in 2022, and you start with those receivers, right? Johnny Wilson's just a freak with Pittman, Jared Verse on the D-line. Whatever Norvell's selling, boy, they're certainly buying out of the transfer portal.
Man, Norvell has been a hot coach, not just recruiting, but the transfer portal, as you mentioned. I mean, if you go back and look at Jermaine Johnson a year ago, you know, he was a transfer that came over from Georgia, ended up being a first-round pick. I think we had – what was the other D-lineman that we got from South Carolina as well, ended up making the roster with the Rams, along with Jermaine Johnson. So this year, you're right. No one knew who Johnny Wilson was, right? No one really knew who Pittman was at Oregon. What about Trey Benson, you know, running back who's come on and really dominated? You know, we look at what we've done, then you look at Bethune, the linebacker from Central Florida that we got also. The transfer portal has been extremely good to Florida State, and I don't see that slowing down anytime soon. If you're a transfer, me personally, just follow the growth, follow the success. If you're a transfer and you're about to be in the portal, Florida State got to be a spot you got to look forward to. Because if you look at the guys who have transferred into the program, Jamie Robinson is another guy who came from South Carolina who's going to be playing on Sunday. Everyone who's basically transferred into Florida State has really benefited from success, successful play, and they have really flourished and developed tremendously. And like I said, man, Jordan Travis is a transfer as well. You know, even though he didn't transfer he was there before Norvell, but he's a transfer guy as well. So, man, transfer portal has been extremely good at Florida State.
A couple of more for Bryant McFadden. You see him on CBS Sports HQ. You can also follow him on Twitter at @BMAC_SportsTalk. Bryant, I want to sneak in a couple of Jaguar questions. Before we get there, I'm just curious, a guy like you who won a Super Bowl, you know what it takes at the next level. Anthony Richardson, the quarterback of the Gators. People are all over the map on him. Some people love him at the next level. Some people think it's going to be a growing process. He had all the expectations coming in this year. Quite frankly, hasn't lived up to them. But again, I don't think the talent is as good in Gainesville overall as maybe people thought. What is your thought on Anthony Richardson moving forward?
I mean, unfortunately for Anthony Richardson, you get the good Anthony Richardson or you get the bad. There's no in between. And that's something that he has to figure out. Remember, for such a long time, when Bo Nix was at Auburn, you got good Bo or bad Bo. And since transferring to Oregon, outside of week one against UGA, we've been getting the good Bo Nix. Consistency is the most important thing at the quarterback position. And that has been an issue for Anthony Richardson. If you look at the hype he had in the beginning of the year, you look at what he did against Utah, people were ready to put him in the top five draft, right? And then he kind of flatline a little bit, to say the least. So that's the most important thing about young quarterbacks. You got to find a way to hit that consistent stride. Remember, I can say the same about Jordan Travis. Before this year, he was up and down, you know, but now he's playing consistent football. You don't question the skill set, the talent, athleticism of Anthony Richardson. The only thing you question is consistency. And one thing I know about good quarterbacks in college football, quarterbacks that have a legit shot to play on Sunday, they make everything around them better. Because they're a different skill set. They're a different player. And you have the football in your hand every time. They make everything around them better. They make average pass catchers look above average. They make average offensive linemen look above average. And that has to be his mindset, because I believe he has aspirations to play on the next level. And I think he has a talent, but he just has to become more consistent. And you know what? I hope he's inconsistent Friday night. I'm sorry, Anthony Richardson, but I got to keep it real with you. You can be consistent against any other team, but Friday night, I need him to be inconsistent.
Florida State needs this one, right? They haven't beaten Florida since 2017. It's a big one for the Noles because the Gators are coming in wounded.
No question, they're coming in wounded. You know, and when you have that Gator across the street and it's already been hit by a car and it's still holding on for dear life, come on, bring that monster truck over and run them over it all the way.
Well, I think that might happen on Friday night, Bryant. As a matter of fact,
question.
I don't like Florida chances there. All right, as we wrap up with you, Trevor Lawrence and the Jaguars. Look, the record isn't great, 3-7. It is what it is. But man alive, their 7 losses are by 10 points or less. 6 of those losses by 1 possession. They're losing games late, Bryant. But I guess the good thing about that is they're in these games. It's been tough, loss after loss after loss. But, boy, they are battling, which I guess is a good sign.
Yeah, but I really expected more from the Jaguars outside of battling. I mean, their division is bad. The AFC South is bad. And right now, you don't know where to put the Jaguars because they have talent. I mean, if you look at the Jaguars from top to bottom, I think you would probably say just from talent alone, you would probably put them in the top of their division. But for some reason, they just find a way to lose ball games. They find a way to lose ball games. And that's the first telling sign of a team that's bad. Dick LeBeau, who was my defensive coordinator in Pittsburgh, Hall of Fame guy, extremely intelligent, football mind. He used to tell us all the time, remember, a bad team will find a way to lose, and a good team will find a way to win. Every year you see that in the NFL. So Jacksonville got to find a way to win ball games and get out of their own way, because there's too much talent on this team for them to have, what'd you say, 7 losses?
Yeah, 3-7.
3-7? Come on, man. That's how? Think about this. You look at the Tennessee Titans, how are they winning ball games? We don't know. But every it seems like more than none, when you look at the scoreboard with Tennessee, they have more points than the team they're playing against. And you know what they're going to do is Derrick Henry, and that's it. But they find ways to win. Jacksonville got to find a way to win. They got too much talent for them to have 7 losses at this point. It'd be one thing if you're playing in a very, very difficult division where you got 3 playoff caliber teams in there. Come on, let's keep it real. The Colts are walking wounded. The Houston Texans are basically a dead body that hasn't been put in the grave yet. So what are you doing, Jacksonville? That's too much talent for you to have 7 losses right now. Hopefully they come off this bye week and really showcase what type of team they can be moving forward, because there's too much talent for them to have 7 losses right now.
I think you just answered this question, but so you don't buy into the whole a young team needs to learn how to win philosophy.
I do, but by now you should know how to win.
Yeah.
We're in, you're 10 games in. It's one thing, as I stated before, if you're playing in a division that has legit competition, playoff-like competition. The AFC South is a one-team division. It's Tennessee and everyone else. Indianapolis has been a flop. Houston, no one really expected anything from them. So Jacksonville, the window of opportunity is there for you. So, yeah, I feel like young teams find a way to win. You got to learn how to win. But in this process, you should know that how to win. If you look at the loss from Jacksonville, it's been self-inflicted wounds. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. It'd be one thing if you're just losing because you don't have what it takes. But these losses have been self-inflicted wounds. Costly red zone turnovers, mistakes, blown coverages. That has hampered them. That's no learning process. It's just not executing.
Hey, Brian, final question for you. Trevor Lawrence, moving forward, what's your thought? People down here are kind of celebrating because Zach Wilson got benched today. So, again, thank you, Frank Gore, for beating the Rams there with the Jets in 2020. But Trevor Lawrence, moving forward these next 7 games, what do you hope you see as he continues to improve?
You got to be smart with the football. Like I talked about, turnovers in the red zone will get you beat. We've seen that quite a few times from Trevor Lawrence. He just has to be smart with the football. And one thing that I'm starting to learn with Jacksonville, Trevor Lawrence, we know they drafted you to be the arm of the franchise. But you know what? It's okay riding the legs of Travis Etienne. Mm-hmm. That's okay. Travis Etienne has really taken flight this year in this offense. So my thing is this, man, it's okay in allowing him to do what he's been doing. And now you can make plays off of the run game. But Trevor Lawrence, you got to be smart with the football. When you don't have a smart quarterback making smart plays, you're not going to win ball games.
former Florida State Seminole Bryant McFadden. He is a Super Bowl winner in the National Football League with Pittsburgh. You can follow him on Twitter at BMAC underscore Sports Talk, at CBS Sports HQ. Bryant, give yourself a little love for the Jacksonville audience. Where can they find the All Things Covered podcast with you and Patrick Peterson?
You can find us anywhere where podcasts are found. Of course, we have a YouTube channel as well. Find us on YouTube. Just hit All Things Covered, All Things / Covered. I think it is YouTube. But yeah, just find us anywhere you want to listen to podcasts. We're on every platform. And just give us a shot.
Hey, Bryant, you're the man. Know you're busy this time of year. Really appreciate it, buddy. Have a very happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you for having me. Anytime.
Really enjoy the conversation there with Bryant McFadden. Again, former Florida State Seminole and a Super Bowl winner with the Pittsburgh Steelers. The analogy was kind of harsh, I guess. You see a wounded gator grasping for life in the roadway. What do you say? You go get the monster truck and finish the job?
And run it over.
And that's what he wants Florida State to do to the Gators on Friday night. I don't blame him. Look, he played for Bobby Bowden. He was all about that rivalry with Florida and Florida State in the mid-2000s. If I were a betting man, I'd say that's probably what's more than likely going to happen on Friday. Denmark, have you seen the Gator injury report when it comes to the wide receiver position?
I have.
It's unbelievable. What, Jaquavion Frazier's is out. Xavier Henderson's out. Marcus Burke is out. And there's like two more guys
Justin
that are
Shorter,
out.
Justin Shorter.
Yeah.
Zipper's questionable. Pearsall's questionable. Bowman's out.
Apparently Pearsall, at least an hour ago, it was reported that he's trending towards playing, which is good because every pass Anthony Richardson makes is going to go to him. Because there's nobody else. I guess what Caleb Douglas, right? It's the other guy. But good grief, man. The Gators are not going to have any wide receivers. Hey, Anthony Richardson, just tell everybody to get out of your way. Just line up and shotgun the entire game and just run. Kind of like I used to do with Michael Vick in Madden Football on PlayStation. I just told everybody else, get out of the way. And I put Vick in the shotgun and I just ran it every single time. Again, Florida State coming up on Friday night. We will get into the Jacksonville Jaguars in the 9 o'clock hour. The Jaguars and the Ravens. Lamar Jackson for Baltimore did not practice today. I wouldn't read too much into that, but it is interesting. On a Wednesday practice, no Lamar Jackson for the Ravens. Of course, the big news for Jacksonville, Darrell Henderson, former running back from the Los Angeles Rams, released, I guess surprisingly, released yesterday, claimed on waivers today from the Jacksonville Jaguars. Of course, the Jaguars traded James Robinson to New York a couple weeks ago. Travis Etienne has been nothing short of a beast since that trade, but every time Etienne comes out of the game, there is a clear drop-off when Jamichael Hasty goes into the game. Now the Jaguars get an opportunity for a 7-game tryout for Darrell Henderson of the Rams. Henderson, 13 career touchdowns last year with the Rams in their Super Bowl year, carried the ball 149 times for 688 yards and 5 touchdowns. Also had 29 catches out of the backfield for an additional 3 touchdowns last year. I mean, he's rushed for 1,700 yards in shy of 4 seasons in the league, so he's averaging over 400 yards on the ground every year he's been in the NFL. We'll see. He's an unrestricted free agent come January. This is a situation where you give him 7 games, you see what you got, and maybe something can happen afterwards. Maybe he likes being here. Maybe it's a nice combo with he and Travis Etienne. Certainly worth that. I would take that in a heartbeat. So we'll see Darrell Henderson. I would imagine probably suited up, right? If he gets into town tomorrow, he goes through practice on Thursday, practice on Friday, a walkthrough on Saturday. There might be a handful of plays that Henderson could be involved in on Sunday against the Ravens. We will wait and see. But more on Jacksonville and Baltimore with Leon Searcy, former Jaguar Pro Bowl offensive tackle. That's coming up inside of about a half an hour from now. Coming up next, rivalry week. It's not just Florida State. It's Alabama-Auburn. Tell you one thing. I think Alabama's going to win that game. I'm not breaking any news there. Have you seen Auburn under Cadillac Williams ever since they fired Brian Harsin? They're playing hard for Cadillac Williams, man. I don't think Auburn's going to win the game, and I don't think they're going to retain Cadillac Williams as their coach. But it's a different Auburn team, and it's an Auburn team that I think is going to battle Alabama in the Iron Bowl. You, of course, got clean old-fashioned hate in the state of Georgia with Georgia and Georgia Tech. You got the Apple Cup with Washington and Washington State. I guess we don't call it the Civil War anymore, Denmark, between Oregon and Oregon State.
No.
That was not politically correct enough after we've done it for, 50 years. So we had to change that recently. But there's a big game in the state of Oregon. How about that? Between the Ducks and the Beavers. So fantastic week all over the place. I'm certainly looking forward to it. Let's talk about all of it with Mike Hugonen on 3.com. He does a terrific job covering the world of college football, and he is next here on Hacker After Dark. As always, Jacksonville, we are streaming for your viewing pleasure on the 1010XL YouTube channel. You'll see Hacker After Dark there until 10 o'clock tonight. Also at 1010XL on Twitter, you'll see Hacker After Dark streaming live there until 10 o'clock this evening. With Dylan Denmark, the Hacker Ryan Green with you, Mike Hugonen talking college ball. That's next here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Hacker After Dark on 1010XL. Now.
Hello.
Another great guest on the Farrah and Farrah phone line. Brought to you by the accident attorneys at Farrah and Farrah.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. Rivalry week is here throughout the world of college football, and it'll go a long way into determining the four college football playoff participants. Mike Hugonen does a terrific job covering the world of college football. He's with On3.com, and he's always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL. Mike, how we doing?
Doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, Mike, always appreciate it, man. All right, so it's not college football playoff implications, but a pretty interesting game Friday night going to take place in Tallahassee. Boy, Florida State's a team that feels awfully good about themselves, Mike. After what happened in Nashville last week, I would say Florida probably limping in. You had the Black Friday night game atmosphere. What are your early thoughts going into Tallahassee on Friday night?
Yeah, you mentioned this is rivalry week, and it's a big deal around college football. And the fact that Florida and FSU are playing on Friday, I think, shows how far this rivalry has fallen. Yeah, you're right. Florida, they've lost five games. I think you can say that four of the losses were sort of, if not necessarily expected, okay, fine. They lost to that team. At least that team is good. Vanderbilt is not good. So Florida has a ton to prove. And I think if Florida State cannot beat this Florida team, that Florida State isn't as far along in its rebuild as people think. Florida's defense is not very good. The offense is extremely inconsistent. The offensive game plan last week, frankly, I was mystified by it. I know that Vanderbilt's pass defense is horrendous. Anthony Richardson threw for 400. But, you know, Florida prides itself on its physicality and its rushing attack, so why not run the ball? I did not understand that. And FSU has really good defensive stats. They have really good offensive stats, especially on the ground. And that aspect, the FSU rushing attack, probably truly worries the Florida defensive coaching staff.
Mike Hugonen on 3.com. All right, let's look at this from both sides. We'll begin with the Seminoles. Boy, 8-3. Who would have thought 8-3 when the season started back in late August? Kudos to Mike Norvell for the job he's done. Yet I get the sense, Mike, coming into this game, there is a fair amount of pressure on Norvell to beat Florida because, like you said, everybody is well aware this is a down Florida team. And if Billy Napier is who Gator fans believe he is, this is going to be Florida's worst team for a while. So does that add to the expectation for the Noles on Friday night?
Yeah, unquestionably. Again, if Florida State can't beat this Florida team, that's not a good sign for Florida State because this is not a good Florida team. FSU comes in having won four in a row. You know, were any teams in that stretch world beaters? No. But the difference this year has been that Florida State has not only beaten teams it should beat, it's physically overmatched them. And that's that's a good sign. The running game is cranking big time. I mean, 200 yards rushing in six consecutive games. A very deep backfield. Jordan Travis has become a solid passer, not anything close to being elite, but he is. He's made strides as a passer. And, again, the defensive stats are quite good. I'm not sure the defense is as good as the stats say it is, but it's still – Adam Fuller deserves credit because it's – you know, Jared Verse has been the difference maker at edge that they expect, and he's missed a while because of injuries. Tatum Bethune, the linebacker transfer they brought in from UCF, has been a gigantic addition. The secondary is playing really well. But, yeah, this Florida State team is playing extremely well at the end of the season, and there's a reason they're 8.5-point favorites.
Mike, I'm inclined to believe Florida State, obviously the favorite going in with good reason. I would think Florida State should win this game. If they do, and if they win it rather convincingly, look, I don't think it's going to be 45-3 like it was against Miami, but let's say Florida State wins this game by, you know, two touchdowns plus. But what does that say about the state of college football? Is Florida State simply that much farther ahead than Florida and Miami? Is it a case where Florida and Miami just had a bad year? How would you assess that if the Noles win pretty easily on Friday night?
Yeah, I think if you're Florida State and you beat Florida by two touchdowns plus, or, you know, 20 points plus, yeah, you are a long way ahead of both Florida and Miami. I think Florida is in better shape than Miami, but this Miami recruiting class is going to be good, and we'll see what happens next year on the field. Obviously, that Napier's recruiting well as also. I think the Florida issue, you know, the Miami issue this year is that they're bad on both sides of the ball. Florida's biggest issue is it's bad on defense, but it's offensive inconsistency, and that's one thing. FSU seems to have developed. Here's what we are offensively: we're a run-first team that can throw the ball, but we do not want to have to throw the ball, and that's a sign of a pretty good team, that they're able to do what they want. They are farther along. It is also Mike Norvell's fourth season compared to the first for Napier and Cristobal. FSU should be further along. And that's why I think that if FSU were to lose this game, that's a gigantic negative toward Norvell.
Mike Huguenin on 3.com here with us on 1010XL in Jacksonville. Mike, final thought about Florida State before we flip sides and go to the Gators. Jordan Travis, to me, is a phenomenal story. From a guy who couldn't functionally throw a pass downfield, say, three, even 2.5 years ago, to maybe the best quarterback in the ACC. I mean, my gracious, what a transformation.
You know, I think Drake May and Sam Hartman are better. But there's no question but that Jordan Travis, yeah, he went from he's a guy playing quarterback to a quarterback who's making plays when he needs to. And again, his legs have always been a big part of his game. They still are, though. They're relying a lot less on those legs because they have a really nice running back group. Trey Benson has been, I think, better than even FSU expected. He's bounced back nicely from the knee injury he had at Oregon. But Travis's development as a passer, again, you're right, he went from being a guy that teams wanted to see him throw the ball, opposing teams, because they knew bad things were likely to happen 40% of the time. Now he is a competent passer. The receiving core still isn't quite what it should be if you're Florida State, but it has gotten better thanks to some transfers. And Jordan Travis, he has played consistent football, and that's a gigantic plus as well, because the last couple of seasons, or heck, for the last five seasons, FSU has not had consistent quarterback play, and now they do, and that's one reason they're 8-3.
All right, Mike, let's go to the Florida Gators. Now, they enter at 6-5. We mentioned the loss to Vanderbilt. I think all the goodwill that Florida had built up with the wins over A&M and South Carolina was completely crushed and destroyed up there in 35-degree weather in Nashville. Before we break down Friday night's game, just a thought on Anthony Richardson. It takes a lot to make me speechless. I'm sure you know. You've known me for quite some time.
Yeah.
When I see a Hail Mary go land in row G of the stands that ends the ball game, I could not believe that. The odds of Florida scoring on the last play of the game were probably slim, But I've never seen that awful of a Hail Mary throw in my life. And it just, it's a head-scratching thing by Anthony Richardson. And when you think about this entire season, Mike, he's had a lot of those instances.
Yeah, the inconsistency. The only thing he has shown he is consistent in being is inconsistent. The lack of running from Richardson on Saturday was that hurts Florida big time. He made some really nice throws on Saturday. You have to make nice throws to throw for 400, but he also made some hideous throws. And, yeah, none more than the last play of the game. And you're right. It's the idea that they were going to hit on that was the odds were infinitesimal, but give your guys a chance to make a play, and he didn't do that. I don't think he was helped by the game plan either. But the inconsistency of Richardson has led to a very inconsistent offense. They threw the ball more than they ran it. And that's fine in the Spurrier days that when they had a legitimate quarterback who was a stud and they had great receivers. The idea that they threw the ball more than they ran it against Vanderbilt is mind-blowing. You would think they could line up Montrell Johnson and Travis Etienne with 10 or so runs sprinkled in from Richardson, and they run for 225 or 250, and they beat Vanderbilt. But they came out throwing, and they never stopped, did not understand it, especially with a quarterback who has not shown that he can be a consistent passer. And that's, again, like you said, head-scratching. And this whole season, and generally when Florida loses, and even a couple games they won, the head-scratching aspect all comes from the offense. If you're surprised by the bad defense, you haven't been watching Florida. This is not a good defense for a variety of reasons, most notably a lack of talent. But the offense has some big-time offensive linemen. They got some nice running backs, and they got a quarterback who can run, and they threw the ball more than they ran it against Vanderbilt.
It was bad. There's no question about that. Mike Hugan and On3.com. All right, I asked you the same question about Mike Norvell and Florida State. How important it is for them on Friday night. Clearly, Billy Napier has an out. It's year number one. Having said that, though, Mike, and you and I have talked about this, the fans still like him for the most part. They like the direction. They like the recruiting. But if you lose, and you already have lost, to Tennessee, LSU, and Georgia, if you add a Florida State loss in there as well, that might leave a sour taste in the mouths of Gator Nation, basically losing to every rival that you have.
Yeah, you're right. The only saving grace is, okay, it's year one. But you point, they lost to Tennessee, LSU, Georgia, and Vanderbilt. That's the Vandy loss is the one that I think that's going to stick the longest, and frankly it should, unless they get blown out by FSU. I don't think they're going to get blown out, but I do think they're going to lose. I think the manner in which they play is important. You want to see a team that's fired up and running around hitting people and making some big plays on offense. Florida has the ability to make big plays on offense. They've made them, frankly, in every single game, even the games they've lost. So, but again, it goes back to, they dominated South Carolina. South Carolina turns around and blows the doors off Tennessee. Florida was throwing into the end zone with a chance to beat Tennessee. They cut the margin to a one-score game against Georgia. And then they lay the gigantic egg in Nashville. So they need to play well on Friday. You know, a narrow loss is one thing, but you're right. A 38-17 kind of loss, I think, is going to lead to a few more people saying, "What's going on here? The talent isn't this bad, is it?" I think the talent is bad, but there's enough talent on offense for them to have a pretty good showing, I think, on Friday. But you're right. I think the margin of victory is a key here to get fans feeling good going into the off season. Obviously, the portal and the recruiting is key. The recruiting class looks like it's going to be a very good one, though not elite. But I'm not sure if you expected an elite class. I think you were sort of being a little bit naive. But the portal work he needs to do is gigantic, and maybe there's a staff change or two as well.
You know, and speaking of that, as we begin to wrap up with Mike Hugan in from On3.com, we've already seen it, right? I think the number six already between guys that have been dismissed from the team or entered the transfer portal. you get the feeling after Friday's game that that number is going to intensify. Maybe guys that they don't want to return, guys that want greener pastures elsewhere. And you would have to think if Anthony Richardson goes pro, and I don't know why you would think he wouldn't if he's a projected first-round pick, Mike, the starting quarterback for the Gators in 2023 is probably on somebody else's roster.
Right now.
So it's going to be a fascinating offseason.
Yeah, I think that if Richardson doesn't come back, they're going to have to go into the portal to get a starter, because you don't want to start Rashad as a true freshman. Plus, how good is this kid? We're going to find out. But you don't want to start a true freshman in the SEC. I don't think Jack Miller is an SEC-caliber quarterback. I don't think Jalen Kitten is an SEC-caliber quarterback. I don't think Max Brown, the kid they signed last year, is an SEC-caliber quarterback. So my assumption is that, like a lot of teams, they're going to be going heavy into the portal. The NIL aspect has become extremely important in recruiting, and especially in terms of portal recruiting. They could use a veteran defensive tackle, not a star, just a guy who can play 30 plays a game. You wonder if they're going to go out and try to get a portal tight end or a portal linebacker. But I think a quarterback, if Richardson leaves, and a defensive tackle are absolute musts in the portal.
All right, Mike, leave us with this. The big game of the weekend nationally, certainly Michigan and Ohio State. Does it matter, I guess, who wins? And that's a stupid question, I know, but if you assume that both are in the top four, if it's a competitive game, would there be an argument? Maybe that's a better way to phrase it. Would there be an argument for even the losing team to still make it into the college football playoff?
Yeah, but I think, again, it goes back to, like you said, if assuming it's a close game, a one-possession game, I think TCU is in if they win out. I think USC has gained a ton of momentum, at least in the media and coaches poll. That'll be interesting to see Tuesday night if the playoff committee agrees with the two media polls. But I think the Michigan-Ohio State loser has, especially with Tennessee out of the mix now, I think the Michigan-Ohio State loser is in relatively good shape, assuming it's a close game and assuming that USC doesn't absolutely blow out Notre Dame and whoever they play in the Pac-12 title game. The positives for USC, obviously they beat UCLA, a top 20 team. Notre Dame's going to be in the top 20, and their opponent in the Pac-12 title game is going to be in the top 20. So you're going to be ending the season, the recency bias aspect, you're going to have beaten three top 20 teams in a row. And, oh, by the way, you got maybe the best player in the country. You have a super offense. Defensively, USC has a super offense. But, you know, it's the kind of team that Riley's always coached. So I think USC is the one school out there, assuming TCU wins out, USC is the one team out there that could mess things up for the Ohio State Michigan loser.
And leave us with this, Mike, 30 seconds. If TCU wins out, that's the only way this would happen, I think. But TCU wins out, they're in. The winner of Michigan-Ohio State, they're in. That's two spots. If LSU beats Georgia, do they both go?
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, I think LSU and Georgia both would go in that instance. But I'll be honest, I've seen LSU play, and I've seen Georgia play. I cannot foresee LSU scoring enough points to beat Georgia. It's been a great season for Brian Kelly and LSU, but I can't see them beating the Dogs.
I could do this for hours. Mike Hugenin is one of my favorites to talk college football with. You can see his terrific work at on3.com. Mike, as always, thank you for the time. You and your family have a great Thanksgiving, and we'll talk again soon.
Same to you, man. Appreciate being on. Thanks.
Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
And again, thank you to Mike Hugenin on3.com for joining us here on a Wednesday night edition of Hacker After Dark. Rivalry week, of course, Florida State. You'll hear that game on 1010XL, 92.5 FM, Friday night. And then coming up on Sunday afternoon, the Jaguars back on the field taking on the Baltimore Ravens. A couple of Jaguar pieces of news. They started the activation process for Kalebon Chaisson, which might be just a season saver right there, getting Kalebon Chaisson back in the fold. But nevertheless, he's a body to throw out there. He's been on injured reserve. We'll see what happens there. But he is available to come back now, or at least eligible to come back. And they picked up Darrell Henderson off of waivers, the running back that was released by the Los Angeles Rams. Look, the guy had 700 yards rushing for the Rams last year that won the Super Bowl. He had 8 touchdowns, 5 on the ground, 3 receiving out of the backfield for a team that won the Super Bowl last year. Remember, he filled in for Cam Akers a majority of the season when Akers was out with the Achilles. So the fact they outright released him is interesting. It's a no, it's one of those situations where it doesn't really cost Jacksonville anything. You bring Henderson in, you got him for 7 games. He's scheduled to become an unrestricted free agent. You see what he's got, and that'll determine if you want to try to re-sign him in the offseason. So it's certainly a low-risk, high-reward situation there. And I would have to think you want to get him active this week. Again, only 7 games to go. You want to get a pretty good sample size to see how he and ETN works. Hopefully you can get him up to speed tomorrow, Friday, and Saturday, enough so that he at least might have a handful of plays on Sunday when Baltimore comes in here. Baltimore does come in. Lamar Jackson did not practice today for the Ravens. We'll monitor that as the week goes on. I also thought it was interesting. Calais Campbell makes his return to Jacksonville. Talking to the Baltimore media today, he said the Ravens defensive coaches are describing Travis Etienne as Alvin Kamara, but faster. Think about that, Jaguar fans. You have an opposing defensive staff in Baltimore telling their players that Travis Etienne is essentially Alvin Kamara, but faster. I like that. I like that a lot. Travis Etienne certainly starting to get some attention from some defensive staffs around the National Football League. Leon Searcy, former Jaguar Pro Bowl offensive tackle. We'll talk Jaguars and Ravens with Leon coming up in less than 5 minutes. Also at the bottom of the 9 o'clock hour, we'll head to Tallahassee. Irish Schofel, warchant.com, as that'll wrap up our Florida State preview for the week. A Wednesday night on Hacker After Dark with Dylan Denmark. The Hacker, Ryan Green with you. Jacksonville, we're glad you're with us. Leon Searcy next here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
It's Hacker After Dark on 1010XL. Now, another interview on the Farrah and Farrah phone line, brought to you by the accident attorneys at Farrah and Farrah.
And back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. The Ravens and the Jaguars, Sunday, 1 o'clock. Of course, you'll hear the game right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. The Jaguars coming back off the bye week, and they get Lamar Jackson, Calais Campbell, and the Baltimore Ravens. Let's talk to a former Jaguar, and I guess a former Raven, right? At least a cup of coffee in Baltimore. My friend Leon Searcy, always kind enough to join us here on Hacker After Dark. Leon, how we doing?
I'm doing great, bro. How you doing?
Leon, we're good, man. All right, bye week in the rearview mirror after a week off. Leon, what do you hope to see from this team on Sunday at 1 o'clock?
Well, you know, I just like to see better execution on both sides of the ball. That game against the Kansas City Chiefs exposed us a little bit, especially defensively. I mean, it was a lot of times out there we seemed like we didn't know what we were doing. I don't know if that was the game plan of KC or the lack of preparation by us. But you left a lot of holes in the zone coverages that we played against KC. And offensively, you know, I think we played pretty well, excluding the penalties. Illegal man downfield that cost us a touchdown. I think for the most part, if you look at it, I mean, we had 3 turnovers from the Kansas City Chiefs, with us only amounted to 7 points. You've got to be able to maximize your effort against a team like the Chiefs when you get those kinds of turnovers, and then they got to turn into 7 points. But I just want to see execution. I want to see some tenacity. I want to see some nastiness. I want to see a run with 3-7. If those guys over there aren't talking about making a run these next 7 games and let's see what happens, then I think you've got the wrong administration, the wrong coaching staff and the wrong players on your team.
You know, Leon, you guys were 4-7 in 1996 when you went on that magical run. It only needs one game, right? I'm not proclaiming the Jaguars are going to do what you guys did 26 years ago, but they have 7 games remaining. There's a lot of football left to be played, and playoffs or not, you would like to see some success, and it begins with one game. If they can find a way to get it done against a very good Baltimore team, that could propel Jacksonville into a very good second half of the year.
Well, you know what, Hank, it does sound kind of cliche when you say take it one game at a time, but that's all it is. You just want to get that one game underneath your, you know, you want to get that notch in your belt. You know, you get that one game, and then you say, okay, we've won that one game. Let's go win another. Then another. That's what happened to us in 96. We were 4-7. We were like, listen, you know, we got 5 games left. We were 4-7. We could have easily have been 7-4 or 8-3. We had lost a lot of close games. And we said, we know we're good. We know we're good on offense. We know we were making strides defensively. And let's just see what happens. You know, I mean, the worst thing that can happen is that we win a couple of games. We feel good about ourselves, you know, going into the offseason. But those, we end up winning 5 games and went into the playoffs, and then everybody knows the rest is history. You know, those immaculate runs against Buffalo and Denver, and next thing you know, in the AFC Championship game. Now, I'm not saying that the Jaguars can do that, but at this point, you're 3-7. You could be 6-4, 7-3. I just say, the hell with it. You know, let's punch a few people in the mouth and see, you know, at the end of the fourth quarter, let's just see if we got, you know, more points than the other team.
Former Jacksonville Jaguar Pro Bowl offensive tackle Leon Searcy here with us on Hacker After Dark on 1010XL in Jacksonville. Leon, I think we were reminded today how fortunate the Jaguars are to have Trevor Lawrence as Zach Wilson, the number 2 pick in the 2021 draft, gets benched up in New York. Trevor Lawrence, 13 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, completing 65% of his passes 10 games into the year. What are your expectations for him over the next 7 games?
Well, listen, going into the season, I said to myself, Trevor Lawrence last year, I had 12 touchdowns and 17 interceptions. And what I was hoping for is that he doubled his touchdowns this season and he cut his interceptions in half. You know, right now, I mean, he could be on pace for that. I mean, if he gives me 24-8 for the rest of the season, I'll be happy. You know, gives me, gives me 3,500, 4,000 yards. You know, what's more important to me than the actual stats is, you know, his evolution, his evolvement as a quarterback. I want to see him evolve as a quarterback consistently, getting better week in and week out. Yeah, now that's got to amount to scores and no turnovers. But I just want to see him. I want to feel good after 7 weeks of football going into the offseason. Say, you know what, we got our quarterback. We did the right thing by drafting Trevor Lawrence. If he gives me a feel good about it, you know, once the season is over, which means I can go into next season knowing that we're stabilized at the quarterback position.
You know, 10 games in, Leon, I think we're going to see a lot about Trevon Walker, Devin Lloyd, Luke Fortner, that rookie wall. I think Devin Lloyd might have already hit the rookie wall. I think we're going to see a lot of Chad Muma moving forward. How much of a grind will it be for these youngsters coming in after a 10-game season, a bye week? They're probably fresh now, but back into it. Is that rookie wall a real thing?
It is, but you got to get over it. They pay you handsomely to get over that rookie wall. I don't want to hear anything about no damn rookie wall. You know, you got to get it going. I mean, whatever you got to do to reboot yourself. I mean, yeah, listen, I had to deal with it as well. I mean, I was only used to playing 11 games in the bowl games. That's 12 games a season when I was in college in Miami. But, you know, I had to deal with the fact that, you know, 16 games, then the playoff run. So your team is going to need you. I mean, not only is it physically draining, but it's psychologically and mentally draining on you, you know, as a player having to deal with all that. But get over yourself. This ain't about you. This is bigger than you. You know, this is about the team. This is about momentum going into December and going into January. So, I mean, if you care anything about football, you know, you'll push your feelings aside, your emotions and feelings aside, and get to the business of trying to win some football games.
couple of more for former Jaguar Pro Bowl offensive tackle Leon Searcy. Leon, aside from Trevor Lawrence, when you talk about individual players, whether it's offense or defense, who are you most excited to see over the next seven games outside of Trevor Lawrence?
If you want to talk about young players, most excited to see is Travis Etienne. Travis Etienne has been phenomenal over the last couple of games. I mean, I believe he's in the top five or top eight as far as rushing, or probably an all-purpose job, probably top five. I want to see him continue to be explosive. And what's going to be even more impressive about it is the fact that these games moving forward, a lot of these teams that he's going to be playing are teams that are going to be jockeying for playoff positions. I mean, the Titans, the Cowboys, the Ravens, the Jets, you know, the Detroit Lions are going to be a formidable task. So, you know, I want to see him consistently still play and run the ball effectively, catch the ball out the backfield, pick up on those zone blitzes that teams are going to run at you. So, I mean, I want to continue to see him evolve as a running back. You got to remember, this is essentially his rookie year, to be quite honest with you, with the fact that he was hurt last year. So, I mean, he's learning on the fly, and so far I've been impressed by him. Now, he's got to sink those hips a little bit more when them linebackers be coming on those blitzes, because, you know, I've seen him get dogged a couple of times. So, remember, if I see him getting dogged on film, you know, the other defensive coaching staff is going to watch it. So he's going to have to sink those hips and really explode in the players. Hey, listen, well, I'll tell you what he needs to do. Go get some film on Maurice Jones-Drew and how he used to pick up blitzes. Huh? I mean, that bowling ball used to knock those pins down. So he's just got to sink those hips a little bit more on those blitz plays. But he's the most excited guy I want to see moving forward and see how he progresses.
Leon, final moments here with you, the coaching staff. Obviously, it's all about the next seven games. But in the back of Doug Peterson's mind, has evaluation already begun for the 2023 season over these next seven games, whether it's free agents to be, things along those lines?
I hope not. I sincerely hope not. If Doug Peterson isn't preparing for the seven, if Doug Peterson is not preparing these guys for a 6-7 game run to compete at the highest level to win these games, then Doug Peterson needs to be stripped of his duties as coach. He needs to be telling these guys, listen, we're 3-7. We've got seven games left. Let's see if we can run the table. Let's see if we can win 5 out of 7, 6 out of 7, 7 out of 7, and give ourselves an opportunity to see if we can go to the dance. And I'm pretty sure Doug is doing that. He knows the talent that he has on both sides of the ball. He knows that he's lost a couple close ones. He knows his team could easily be 6-4 right now, or 7-3, or hell, even 5-5. And 5-5, we're in the hunt at 5-5. So I believe that Doug is preparing these guys to go to battle, to do battle with the Baltimore Ravens and whoever comes next. So that's just his pedigree. He's been a Super Bowl champion. He's been in situations, I'm sure, where it looks abysmal and no one's giving you a shot. So I'm pretty sure Doug Peterson is preparing these guys to do battle over these next 7 weeks.
Hey, Leon, final question for you. Baltimore comes in on Sunday. That's a tall order, man. Lamar Jackson, you know how good he is. That is a tough physical team on both sides of the ball. What's your expectation for Sunday afternoon?
19-13, Jags.
You think Jacksonville wins the game, do you really?
Why not?
Wow. You're right. Look, I mean, I don't think it's the craziest thing, but, boy, I think back to that Giants game, Leon. They couldn't stop the RPO with Daniel Jones. What Lamar Jackson might do to them if they haven't cleaned that up by now could be a pretty scary situation.
I agree.
Well, we'll certainly see what happens. Baltimore and Jacksonville on Sunday, regardless of what happens. Leon Searcy, myself, and head coach Dave Campo, we'll have the fifth quarter for you live at Perfect Rack Billiards out in Murray Hill. Leon, always appreciate it, man. Have a terrific Thanksgiving to you and your family, and we'll talk Sunday on the fifth quarter.
All right, bro. See you there.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, it is a Wednesday evening. We're glad you're with us. Florida and Florida State, Friday night, Doak Campbell Stadium. Of course, you'll hear the game right here on 1010XL. Let's head to the state capital of Tallahassee, Florida. Let's get the Florida State perspective on this matchup Friday night with our man Ira Schoffel, warchant.com, always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL. Ira, how we doing?
Great. How you doing, Ryan?
Ira, we're good, man. Thank you for the time. And it's been about a month since you and I chatted, and what a month for Florida State football. Coming off that bye week, just dominating performances over Georgia Tech, just bludgeoning Miami, and then the victory over Syracuse and Louisiana. I imagine things are great right now in Tallahassee.
Yeah, it's no doubt about it. It's been such a weird season because, you know, the first four games, they start off undefeated, got the win over LSU, win at Louisville with their backup quarterback playing in the second half, and, you know, really riding high. And then you have the three-game losing streak against three ranked teams, and you start wondering, okay, well, this season at one point looked like it could be a 9 or 10-win season. Well, now it may not be, you know, maybe they'll be 500, and then they completely turned it around again, and they've won these last four. So it's just been a weird season. It's almost been like two or three separate seasons kind of following each other within this one season. But, yeah, right now everybody's on top of the world.
Ira, you know this. You're one of the guys over there. You've covered Florida State for a long time, so I'm interested in your perspective. I mean, do you get the sense that this is going to turn into a Jimbo Fisher-esque situation? I mean, what Norvell's doing in the portal, what he's doing in recruiting, they're winning the games they're supposed to. They were competitive in the games even they lost, and things are more up for Florida State now probably than they've been in the last, what, 6 or 7 years?
Yeah, I think they've definitely turned the corner. The concern I think even, you know, FSU fans have right now is whether or not they can make the kind of run you're talking about where they become a national power right now, because, you know, they still haven't quite recruited at that level. Mike Norvell, I think, has done a great job of using the pieces he has and using them to the best of their ability and getting the guys to work together and play hard and all those great things. But he hasn't gone out and signed a ton of elite prospects. You know, he got a couple in the last class, and then right now he's got a 5-star receiver committed, Hakeem Williams. And you just got a 4-star quarterback to commit. So they're getting some of those pieces. But I think that's the only reason you'd say it's hard to predict that they're going to become a dominant team nationally is because you just don't know. You know, Jimbo, in his first 2 or 3 years, he really stockpiled some amazing talent. And then those guys went out and won all those games. But this team has been more like they've made the most of what they have, but I don't know if they have the elite talent yet.
Ira Schoffel, warchant.com. Ira, it's a heck of an opportunity for Florida State on Friday night. I mean, what they did to Miami was just a beating a couple of weeks ago, 45-3. And if they put one on Florida on Friday night, I mean, this is their state right now. For the first time in many, many years, Florida State will control the state of Florida. And I imagine that is a powerful tool to use, not only recruiting high school kids, but obviously in the transfer portal as well.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's been since 2016 since FSU has beaten both Florida and Miami, so that would be big for them. They haven't beaten Florida since 2017. And so, the way you look at these rivalries, Florida State, Miami, and Florida State, Florida, historically have always been kind of streaks. You know, one school will get the best of the other for 4 or 5 or 6 years, and then it'll flip the other way. So for Florida State, you know, they beat Miami last year. They beat them again this year. This is a chance, you know, they're a favorite of 9 or 10 points against Florida at home. If they win that game, you know, it could say something. And then the key is now you got to capitalize on that. You need to use that in recruiting. You need to use that in the transfer portal and try to strengthen your lead so that it can become one of those runs where, you know, you become the dominant program. That's definitely the hope for Florida State is that they could, you know, they've got Billy Napier and Mario Cristobal are first-year coaches. Mike Norvell's got a 2-year head start. Can he get some separation now and kind of distance that lead if he can?
Ira Schoffel, warchant.com. Ira, we know this is Florida State's final home game. It is senior night. I guess there is some question as to whether it's Jordan Travis's final home game, so we'll get to him in a moment. But the senior class, what have they meant to to Mike Norvell as he's come in here over the last 3 years?
It's a unique situation because, you know, they've got a couple of guys who have been there from the Jimbo Fisher days. A couple of guys that signed in 2017 have been here forever. And, you know, so those guys have stayed through three different coaching staff, which is pretty remarkable. Then you have, you have some of these seniors who came in under Willie Taggart and stayed through Mike Norvell's tenure. And then you have some that came in as transfers, Dylan Gibbons on the offensive line, a few other guys that came in midway through their careers, transfers, and they'll be seniors too. So it's they played a huge role, but they've kind of come from different, just different backgrounds to come together at this point. It's not a huge senior class, but I do think there are probably some juniors because of the COVID year. A lot of guys are still classified as juniors, but have already been at Florida State. This is their fifth year. So I think some of those guys will be walking as well, who aren't necessarily seniors from an eligibility standpoint, but I think this will probably be their last game at Florida State.
You know, the turnaround Jordan Travis has made, and you and I have talked about this, from where he was when he arrived on campus to even as recently as, say, 2 years ago to where he is now, one of the best quarterbacks in the ACC. It's been an amazing transformation. And amazingly enough, he has another year of eligibility if he so chooses. Ira, what's the thought about Jordan Travis over there? Is this his final game, or is there a chance he comes back as well?
I think there's definitely a chance he comes back. I think it's going to be – he's going to be weighing his options. You know, I think part of it's going to depend on, what he hears back from the NFL about his prospects and, you know, is he a mid-round pick? I don't think anybody thinks he's an early-round pick just because of his physical size at quarterback, and he's not there's only – one Lamar Jackson. You know, I don't think he's viewed in that capacity. So, if he's a mid-round pick, maybe. If he's a late-round pick, maybe that makes it more attractive to stay. And, you know, now with the NIL opportunities, he's done a very good job. He's got a manager who handles all his NIL engagements and merchandise and all that. And I think he's done really well in that area. So, you know, if he comes back, I think there's an attractive case Florida State can make to him that, look, if you come back, you'll be a Heisman candidate early in the year. The NIL deals you've had this year will magnify next year. You'll have a lot of these really important weapons around you returning as well. And, that could even elevate your stock higher. But if he's, projected to be a middle round pick in the NFL where he feels like there's a good chance he's going to make a roster and make the NFL minimum, then, maybe you go. But I think they've got a compelling case. If I had to say right now, my guess is it's probably better than 50% he stays, but I don't think it's a slam dunk.
Couple of more for Ira Schoffel, warchamp.com. All right, Ira, let's get to the game, the Friday night aspect of it. I'm not a big fan of Friday night college football. I think it takes away from the high school kids. I've just never liked it. Having said that, Florida State's been on down times, and people are looking at this being on Black Friday as, well, this is where the rivalry is. I'm looking at it as they didn't have a prayer of being on prime time on Saturday night. Right. They're getting on prime time on Friday night. So from that standpoint, if you're looking at that part of the argument, I think it's a good thing for the rivalry that it's a nationally televised game on Friday.
Yeah, and that's really how TV sold it, I think, to the schools. That, look, you're going to get lost. Where Florida State and Florida was coming into the season, Florida State had just had a losing season. Florida had just fired their head coach and had a new coaching staff coming in. There wasn't going to be a lot of excitement on this game on a Saturday with all those other big rivalry games, and it was going to get lost, and it has been getting lost the last few years. And so, like, give it a chance to put it on its own, because we've seen through the years you could have two average teams playing on a Monday night or even a Thursday night, but certainly when there's Monday night games, the Labor Day night games, or the Sunday before the season, those games get huge audiences because they're the only game on. So even if this wasn't a good season for either team, it would still be a marquee game. Well, now it's kind of worked out perfectly for Florida State because they're 8-3. They've had this season where they've had a lot of big wins. There's a lot of excitement. And now they get to play a game at home. Should be a great crowd. Should be a commercial for Florida State and Doak Campbell Stadium. And then if you win the game to go 9-3, it really could be a big moment for Mike Norvell in this program. It's a huge opportunity for them that I think you're right. There's a downside to playing Friday night, but there could be a real big positive if it works out well for Florida State.
It's a terrific opportunity, and that kind of leads me into the game itself. I know a lot of Gator fans. I'm sure you do as well. Not one of them I know, family, friends, et cetera, think Florida has a prayer of winning this game. It's a terrible matchup for the Gators. It's at night in Tallahassee. We know what Doak Campbell Stadium is. At night, Florida State fans smell blood in the water. Florida's wounded, and obviously they haven't beaten Florida, like you mentioned, since 2017. So every facet of this game coming into it looks like it's going to be a Florida State victory in a big way. But with that comes the fact that they actually need to do it. And right. If they were to get beat on Friday night, boy, that would be quite the upset at this point.
Yeah, it's not just, you know, from a X and O standpoint or player versus player standpoint. You know, I think the way they play this well, yeah, Florida State's strengths should match up well against, you know, Florida's weaknesses. I think Florida State should, you know, if you look at the way, you know, Florida's defended the run, I think Florida State's got a great running game. That's a, you know, really good sign. I think the way that, you know, Florida needs to run the ball well, but Florida State's run defense has been very good. You know, there's a lot of things, I think, weighing in Florida State's favor. I think their quarterback's the more polished quarterback at this point of their career. He's played more. Jordan's had a better year overall. But, you know, there's an element to this game that almost feels like a playoff game for a team that had a surprising year. You know, like I think of if you had a team in the NFL that really overachieved and somehow went, you know, 9-7 or 10-6 and got in the playoffs for the first time in several years, and then they get bounced in the first round, that it almost takes away all that great season. You know, this game to me for Florida State almost has like a playoff feel, and not for a team that's in the playoffs every year, but the team that has that one big run and this is their chance, and then they lose in the wild card round, and it's like, well, what did we really accomplish? So I think this game, I mean, it's going to change how people perceive this season. You win it, it's going to feel like this was the huge turnaround year. If you lose it and you lose to Florida at home after Florida's had a bad year, that's going to be it's going to diminish what they've done in these first 10 weeks.
Final moments, Ira Schoffel, warchant.com. Final question before we get to a prediction. Mike Norvell, the thought on him in the Florida State community, Ira, now between what it was on August the 15th. How much different is it?
Yeah, it's completely different. You know, I think there were a lot of fans that really liked him and liked the message he was delivering and liked some of the things he had done and thought there was promise there, but there was a large segment of the fan base that was definitely wait and see. I don't know that there were a ton of rational people who wanted him gone before the season because they know what a mess he inherited. But there were plenty of people who were concerned and not really necessarily all bought in. But I think that's changed. And, you know, especially when you look back, you know, they beat LSU and the year LSU is now having, nobody realized how good of a win that might have really been at the time. You know, they've exercised some of the demons in terms of, you know, the way they beat Miami. You know, they've won games. They've played really well in games where they're supposed to win. You mentioned that at the very beginning. They're not just winning games that they're supposed to win, but they're really handling their business, taking care of it, really professional approach. And then, you know, then they've won some of these big games as well. So, yeah, I think I would say the fan base is all bought in on Mike Norvell. I would imagine Florida State's going to have to give him another deal extension at the end of the season. And I don't think anybody will be complaining about it. Sometimes when a coach gets an extension after one good year, people are like, what are we doing? I think most people are excited about the future of Mike Norvell.
All right, Ira, leave us with this. Conventional wisdom, Florida State wins the game. How do you see it, though? Is it a tough ball game for the Seminoles, or do they win it going away?
I think it'll be tougher than the last month, for sure. I mean, part of why they've been so dominant the last month, they haven't really played any dynamic quarterbacks. And so Anthony Richardson certainly is that, especially when he's playing well. So I think it's going to be a good game early. But I do think Florida State's a better team. I think they play cleaner. I think they play, you know, they don't give up a lot of big plays. And Florida, I think for Florida to win this game, they're going to have to hit 5, 6, 7 huge plays, because I don't think they can just drive up and down the field against this defense. But Florida State's defense has done a very good job of not giving up big plays. So I think Florida State's offense is going to do what they do. They're going to score in the 30s. And so I think Florida State's probably going to win it. I think 35 to 14 or 17, somewhere in that range. I think Florida State's just a better football team at this point in time. third year in the program versus Billy Napier's first season.
Ira Schoffel, warchant.com. Ira, thank you for the time, my friend. Know you're busy this week. Have a terrific Thanksgiving. We'll talk again soon.
You too. Thanks, Ryan.
Well, there you go. Thank you to Ira Schoffel, warchant.com, for joining us here on Hacker After Dark. It should be a good one on Friday night, Florida and Florida State. Of course, you'll get the game right here on 1010XL Radio in Jacksonville. My goodness, we were busy on this Thanksgiving Eve edition of Hacker After Dark. We have a ton of people to thank, including Ira Schoffel, warchant.com, my man Leon Searcy, former Jaguar offensive tackle. You get him every day on XL Primetime. You also get him weekly here with me on Hacker After Dark. Thank you to Bryant McFadden, former Florida State Seminole, was a Super Bowl winner in the National Football League. Really enjoyed talking Florida and Florida State with him, as well as Trevor Lawrence and the Jacksonville Jaguars. And finally, my friend Mike Huguenin, on3.com, to look ahead to a big weekend, a rivalry weekend in the world of college football. That'll do it for the week here on Hacker After Dark. Of course, Thanksgiving tomorrow. We are off on Friday for Black Friday. Everybody have a terrific Thanksgiving. You will hear Florida and Florida State right here on 1010XL Friday night. You will hear Jacksonville and Baltimore right here on 1010XL on Sunday afternoon. Dylan Denmark was your producer this evening. Dylan, great job as always. I'm the hacker, Ryan Green. And Jacksonville, thank you for spending part of your Wednesday evening with us right here on Hacker After Dark on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. So for all of us here on HAD, have an absolutely terrific remainder of your Wednesday evening. And we will talk to you next week after a long four-day weekend. Until then, have an absolutely terrific Thanksgiving, everybody.